Thank you, Steve. It's Bill. It's Wendy. It's clinical psychologist, certified life coach, parenting and relationship expert, host of a podcast called Better. He's John Duffy. How are you?
I'm great, guys. How are you?
We rolled in the couch. We're going to do a mini session today. And you, where do I start?
We're going to blame everything on our mothers, John. Isn't that the way you're supposed to do it?
That's a good
fault.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. Of course it is. Yeah. Well, right. That was a good session.
As you know, thank you. As you know, we are all in transition here at the radio station. Yeah. We've been working here at Tribune Tower forever, and now we're going to another building. And that is a coincidence, and because that's what you wanted to talk about today, is transitions.
It is, and that's what I've been dealing with a lot in my office. This is a transitional time of year from school to summer, from, you know, I've been wondering, like, what's it like for you guys to go through this transition that you're going through? Is it great? Are you excited about it? Is there some pathos and sadness around it? What's it been like?
Can I just say, Bill is unflappable. I'm not
Can't
kidding.
Flap me.
I was worried about flapping, Bill.
No, don't even try.
I hate. I'm not very organized. I'm a clutterer. So I came in first thing today, and yesterday I've been working on packing up my one box of stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't like transition. It makes me really stressed out. I will say my whole life has been a transition. Dad died when I was 10, a change. Mom went to work, a change. So I'm used to change happening a lot, but I still don't like it.
Right.
Now, Bill, on the other hand, Mr. Unflappable. Yeah. It seems like you had a pretty stable, everything was copacetic at your house upbringing.
Yeah.
So I would think he would have a tougher time with change. I'm kind of used to it.
Right.
He is not.
Right. So you would think that, Bill's not acclimated to the idea of change, so this is going to hit you harder.
Unflappable.
Any truth, Bill?
You know how some things are just inevitable? There's nothing you can do to change it.
Right.
If it was up to me, we'd be staying here. I'm sure a lot of people would say that same thing. This is a great place we're working at.
Right.
But you just go, what can I do? You have to follow suit. You have to give in to it.
Will you touch my hand and give me some of your power? I mean, that's a great attitude. And I know that in theory, I can't put it to the test.
Right. And a lot of people in my field call what Bill's doing like this kind of radical acceptance. Okay, I'm going to, it's like the serenity prayer. I'm going to accept the things I can't change.
That's it.
Nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But that's not easy for everybody. And so I was hoping that there'd be this difference between you because... you guys are so alike in every other discernible
way.
Right,
it's the one way that we're different.
Yep. But I think we all run through change in different ways. And sometimes we think like, oh, this shouldn't be that big a deal, so I shouldn't feel anything. Or maybe, Bill, you think like, everybody seems so affected, maybe I should feel something more. Instead of just allowing like, this is how I deal with this, you know, like, and as long as I'm like allowing myself to feel what I feel and I'm not pressing up against it, this is fine, you know, like,
right.
and maybe something will hit me a month down the road and I'll get, you know, choked up.
Yes.
You know, across the river though, over there,
yes.
You know?
Well, the emotional end of it is really different from the physicality of packing things up. The emotional part, I think, is it might even be harder for me than it is for you.
Yeah, you've been here longer.
Well, it's long. Yeah, I guess that's what it is. It falls under that category. But you know how, John, there are some people, like I didn't move a lot when I was a kid. I stayed in basically an apartment
Stability.
When I was really young and then a house when I was older.
Yeah.
And that was it. But I had cousins that moved because of their dad's job almost every year.
Oh. Right.
And I would say I wasn't built for that.
Right.
I couldn't
do
that.
Yeah, and I think it's really hard to gauge whether we're built for something like that unless it's just our life. You know what I mean? So your cousins didn't have a choice, I assume, right? Dad's job shifts, they move, right? And so they have no choice but to adapt to that or to collapse underneath the pressure of it, you know? And so by and large, it sounds like they adapted pretty well. And I think part of what started the judgment around all this was, I don't know if you ever took Psych 101 kind of classes, but there was a woman named Elizabeth Kubler-Ross who came up with these stages of grief and loss. And we've kind of expanded that to mean any change, you know? And they're like denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance.
Please, we don't want to move. We want to
stay
in the studio.
Right.
Yeah.
And we think we're supposed to move through these stages in a nice linear fashion, and nobody ever does. In my experience, nobody ever does. Some people sit in denial forever. Some people really never even step into the process and grieve it at all. You might have coworkers who end up in their new offices and you feel like there's no discernible difference in their affect at all.
Right, right, right.
And that's not the end of the world. I mean, I guess that's the broad point is, you know, it's okay.
Those five stages, do they tend to be in the same order for most people or are they always scrambled?
So when she wrote this, and this goes back probably 50 years yeah. when she first came up with this, and the idea was we started with denial. And then we became angry. And then we started bargaining with God or whatever higher power we believed in.
I'll give anything for this to not happen.
Right, please don't let this happen. Then we're depressed because it is happening. And then finally we hit acceptance, which is this actualization period. The truth is, I've never seen that.
Really?
I've never seen that go quite like that. I see people go back and forth between those stages.
Yeah.
But I've never seen anybody in a cookie cutter way work through those stages just the way they're described.
Right.
Yeah.
And those stages apply to everything from finding out you have a terminal illness to the smallest of things. Hey, someone stole my bike. It no matter what it is, you could almost apply those five, right?
Absolutely, 100%. Yep. Yeah. Even switching from one school year to the next.
Yeah.
I mean, something that seems like it has no emotional bearing whatsoever tends to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm more overwhelmed now.
Are you more? Thanks, John. This worked like a charm.
Jeez, that's not what I intended, Wendy.
But those transitions are inevitable, right? I mean, your life is going to be filled with changes.
Well, the truth is, all of our lives are filled with changes all the time. I mean, Wendy, when you demarcated the changes in your life, those were massive changes. But you've had thousands of changes along the way. You know, like something changes virtually every day of our lives, right? You know, the weather's changing and our kids are getting a little bit older and might be shifting from one semester to another.
Right.
Or our parents are getting a little older and they have to move from one place to another. There's all sorts of little changes that we go through in life, right?
Yep.
You know, I remember when the grocery store closed, Wendy, not
in
far
our
from
neighborhood.
Us. And there were people who were affected
right.
by that. I mean, really emotionally affected
now?
By that change. Like, oh my gosh, that was the neighborhood place. Now what?
Yeah.
Is it because we like the comfort of a habit, of a routine?
Yeah.
And so anything that distracts us from our routine or disrupts us is going to...
There's great comfort in the idea that, you know, like I can predict what's coming next. And, you know, once we get to the place where we're not sure what that's going to be like,
right.
there's a little anxiety. Maybe not a lot, depending on the nature of the change, but there's at least a little.
Yeah. That's Dr. John Duffy. If you want to chime in, 312-981-7200 is the way to do it. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Bingo.
You got them all?
Yep. It's Bill. It's Wendy Snyder, clinical psychologist, Dr. John Duffy. Check out his book, The Available Parent. It's awesome. And he also has a great podcast called Better that he co-hosts with his wife, Julie. You have something interesting you wanted to tell us about.
Yeah, so I've been thinking lately about the various ways that we as parents can track our kids, right? We can track iPhones, we can read text threads. I worked with a dad not long ago who was able to retrieve every single email and every single social media post ever sent from his son's phone, which he absolutely regretted.
Yeah, I wouldn't want that information.
Right, right, right. There's certain information we really don't want. Maybe that's the point of this whole segment, but... recently, a mom came to me and said she had installed a nanny cam hidden in her 17-year-old daughter's bedroom.
Her daughter doesn't know the camera's there.
Correct.
Oh,
correct.
Wow.
Because she's concerned about, like, is she being safe? Is she on the computer all the time? Is she doing her homework? Is she posting something? You know, is she sexting with her boyfriend? What's going on in there? So she wants to know. She wants to ensure absolute safety for her daughter.
What advice or counseling did you give her?
I suggested she remove the nanny cam immediately.
I can't even believe that. I mean, if your kid is home, that's a good thing.
Right.
What they do in their room, everybody needs private time.
Right, right. And it's kind of the ultimate in invasion of privacy, right? Right. And this is a 17-year-old kid. And it just comes from this place of fear, right? You know, it's predicated on this assumption that something's going wrong in there. I'm going to root out the problem. It's not like, I trust you and let me know if something's going on and I'll help you out with that. There's no fostering like a connection or a collaboration or anything. It's really creating a massive divide. So I suspect that if I've run into this once or twice, this is a trend that's going on.
I hope not.
Yeah.
But could be right, but I hope not.
I hope not too.
That's an invasion of privacy.
Yeah. But an awful lot of kids tell me they retreat to their rooms because they've got screens and, you know, they've got TVs and cameras and computers and iPads and everything.
You were right on cameras.
Cameras as well, right?
In this case, there was a camera in the room. Right.
But it's a really unhealthy dynamic, I think, for a family to set up where it's based on mistrust. And, you know, if you really want to know what your child's up to, then invite them out into the public space of your home.
Yeah.
But once that door is closed, I think your kid's entitled to some modicum of privacy.
If that kid had found the camera, you'd never be able to trust your mother again. You're just
That's a great point.
They're spying on me. What are they doing?
Bill, that is the issue. I mean, you know, so that child happened not to have found that camera before mom removed it. But in so many instances where parents kind of work these ways of tracking their kids, the issue for kids becomes, well, I don't care what you found. The problem is that you're tracking me. You don't trust me to do anything, you know, and you made mistakes when you were a kid and you figured them out and you're not trusting me to do the same thing. You must have no confidence in me.
Right.
And this feels adversarial. This doesn't feel collaborative. This feels like we're at war here.
Right.
And that becomes the issue.
You mentioned something that a lot of people do parent out of fear. We do want to protect our kids.
Yeah.
And we parent out of judgment from others as well.
Yeah. We do. I think we're always worried about what other people think of our parenting, you know, and a lot of it's projective. But I think some people really do talk about other parents. You know, like one thing I encourage parents to do is don't guess what another parent is up against, because, you know, parenting is difficult these days. It's tricky. There's a lot of moving parts and elements when you get down to all the academic pieces and social media and things like Snapchat and Instagram and Fortnite, this video game that the kids are playing.
All the rage.
Yeah. And we don't understand this stuff very well.
Yeah.
And so to judge another parent because, oh, their kid's not in an AP class, or, you know, they're not involved in the play this year, or not on the football team, you're probably missing the boat and not getting the big picture of what's going on in that family. And the other risk we run is we idealize what some other family is going through. So
all
we like, you know, we should be more like this Joneses, you know, and that's a really unhealthy dynamic too. And I usually tell people, I wouldn't guess that everything's fine with the Joneses either. You know, every family's struggling with something and working something through. Some people are good at putting window dressing on it, making it seem as if everything's fine, but we're all going through something, you know, and so don't judge your kids based on what you think some other kid is doing either, you know?
Go back to the mom who put the camera in the bedroom, because this is very, very strange to
this
me.
This has got you, doesn't it?
Very strange to me. All right. So I don't know that it took you much convincing to let this mom know that that was not in anyone's best interest. But could you have said to her, what if she, your child, 17, you said, right?
Correct.
What if she's worried about you and thinks you're doing things that are a little below the board, and she put a camera in your room? How would you feel about that?
Ooh, I hadn't thought of that question, but it would have been a great one to ask. And 17-year-olds are more clever than we are in this
way
regard
more.
And probably could find a way to do that far more readily than our mom or dad. Effectively, and I, without shaming mom, I effectively just pointed out, like, you know, here's where this could break really, really badly for you. But just the fact that you're spying to this extent, you're gathering data and intel on your kid, suggests that, you know, you've got some problems in the house that need to be addressed. You're not basing anything on trust.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. I would think that could cause a kid to run away.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm not safe in my own house with privacy.
Either literally or figuratively run away, right? You know, so it might be, you know, I might not leave the house, but I'm not going to tell you what's going on in my life either. You know, you're obviously working on that on your own.
Right.
You know, so why would I share?
Are you sure she removed the camera?
No.
Because I got to tell you,
she told me she did, but I'm not sure she did.
But someone who, and I feel sorry in a way for the mom, because she's not having a communication issue with her kid right now and wants to get this information on her own. But I don't, the fact that she put it in there makes me think she's not going to take it out.
Right. No, I've worried about that myself. And there is no doubt in my mind, because I've seen these things drop and fall bad one time after another, that if she hasn't removed that camera, that child is going to find that camera. And when she does, that's when the running away, one way or another, is going to take place, you know?
Can I
that's
ask
when
you
it
something?
Becomes nuclear.
We have 1 minute, Bill.
We have a minute.
White Sox
so
baseball
this isn't
coming up.
Fair, but what happens? This is getting back to the Roseanne case. When somebody says or does something that's so detrimental, I mean, she not only cost herself a job, she cost her cast and her crew a job.
Right.
So what goes on in the next 24 hours in somebody's head when they go, wow, I've done something so devastating, I don't know how to rebound from this? What goes on normally?
if she carries some degree of emotional intelligence,
yeah,
there's a recognition that, wow, I really just burned it all down for nothing,
yeah,
you know? And so there's deep regret. I fear that in cases like this, you know, where I think there's been some other tweets, even in the wake of this, trying to explain it away as an yeah, ambient issue or something like that, that there isn't a whole lot of real emotional intelligence. There isn't a lot of recognition that, well, I just took jobs away, not just from myself, but from a whole bunch of other people because of effectively selfishness, right? But if she doesn't have that kind of self-awareness to recognize, like, I've really caused an issue here, then she might feel a little self-righteous about it. Yeah. You know, she might not be saying that, but she might feel it.
She did apologize. And then she went on to say how her castmates were throwing her under the bus.
Right.
So to me, that's not being very apologetic.
I don't think so either. Wow.
Yeah.
John, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
We put a camera in your house. See if you can find it.
Go to drjohnduffy.com and you can see the streaming.
Oh, we can see the streaming.
Yeah.
We can definitely see the streaming. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll close things off. White Sox baseball is next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.